And good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair. And I regretfully had to break into Real Talk, a recorded reprise. And I regretfully did it because Susan was talking with Charlotte, both of whom are dear and close friends here on the magical isle of Vashon. And yet I suspected that that one could go quite a bit over. And so I, from the captain's chair, hit the switch and we marched onto the parade ground or the grinder with Semper Paratus. Greetings to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world from the captain's chair and from Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band, voiceofvashon.org, streaming live all over the world, live, unrehearsed, unscripted. And my greetings in particular to all of Captain Joe's people who either live or listen from Alaska, or who have served in Alaska, and of course many Coast Guard people have. And I am delivering those greetings because after this broadcast, I am headed to SeaTac, and I am flying up to Fairbanks to spend a few days with my Fairbanks family. I looked at the weather for FAI, for Fairbanks International Airport. It is now -3, but it's moving all the way up to about 8. And the prediction is for the week that I'm going to be there until I'm leaving Saturday evening, Saturday afternoon. And during that time, it does not look like it's going to get very much warmer. So I just am rehearsing all of my polar survival skills, the most important one of which is never melt yellow snow. The binnacle list today, I am including an acquaintance, actually, not a friend, but an acquaintance, but a significant acquaintance. Over the last week, the former Congress lady from Colorado, Patsy Schroeder, died. And Patsy Schroeder was not only an effective member of Congress, but she was a pioneer in the equalization of women's rights. And she was also just a lovely, lovely lady. Patsy died during the week. She has now crossed her bar. And for all of Captain Joe's people who remain on the binnacle list, as always, it is my hope and my wish, my desire and my command that you follow the instructions of your medical practitioner. And if you're fortunate enough, like my friend Bernie across Puget Sound, to have a nurse in the family, I know that she is probably cutting you no slack. So everybody that's on the binnacle list, spring is here. Time to get up, get out, get the bulbs planted for the autumn, all of those things. Clearly, you know more about all of that than I do. I've got two things that I want to put at the front of the program to make sure that I don't pass them up and run out of time at the end and not be able to do them justice. The first one is that I had an email from a friend who owns and operates Lavender Hill Farm here on the magical Isle of Vashon. It is a lovely, lovely place. Kathy is a lovely lady that does a wonderful job with the Lavender Hill Farm. She also not only grows lavender and processes it into many different products, but she also has lodging. And the email that came from Kathy told me that she is still looking for interns to work on the farm this summer. And when I read her email, I thought to myself, there must be, and in fact, I'm certain that there are, out there in Captain Joe's people, some young people, and Kathy in particular is looking for people in the range of 20 to 25. But I suspect that that might be a little bit negotiable. And in any case, I looked at the website that she linked me to, and in particular, the website which has to do with the internship program. So I want all of you to get out your pencil or pen or felt tip or whatever it is that you stylus on a wax tablet for you older hands, and write down this this citation. All one word, Lavender Hill Vashon. Lavender Hill Vashon, all one word, .com/internship. LavenderHillVashon.com/internship. And that will take you to the special website that Kathy has created just for the purpose of telling people how the internship program works. I'm not going to get into the details of it because if you're interested, you've got a young person who is still wondering what they're going to do this summer besides lying around on their stern sheets and not do anything. This would be a wonderful opportunity working with wonderful people and in an absolutely glorious environment. So I'm going to give it to you again because some of you write a little bit slowly. I do too sometimes. LavenderHillVashon.com/internship. And there you will learn all about it. It will tell you what the benefits are. It will tell you what your obligations are. And surely out there somewhere amongst Captain Joe's people is a group of young people that just have not decided what they're going to do for their summer. And this would be just a wonderful opportunity. The other thing that I am talking about before we get to the end of the program, which comes far too quickly, is that the Coast Guard cutter Decisive, 55 years old, has just been decommissioned. She was homeported in Pensacola, Florida, and she was built in the Coast Guard yard, and she is a sister ship to my Reliance. Reliance was the lead ship of the class, hull number 615. She was the first of the whole class of them. And these were the first cutters that we built after World War II. They were quite an advance because the original ones had small gas turbine engines coupled to the diesel engines. And the gas turbines could be coupled in or decoupled for boost. Also, the ships in this particular class had a number of ship handling characteristics. I have to confess that Reliance was the hardest of my six ships to love. And the reason for that was that she had a number of what I had come to accept were part of her personality, but took a little bit of getting used to. Of all of my ships, she could roll and pitch and heave and pound and yaw, and she could do all of these things at the same time. And in any kind of a weather, she would not only do all of these things at the same time, but she would do them with great enthusiasm. She had a flight deck, but she did not have a hangar. So the helicopter, when you had one embark, the helicopter was strapped down on deck and was not in a hangar. So she was out in the elements. Also, when you had the helicopter on deck and strapped down and you were not going anywhere, you had her in high and low tie downs that moved the center of gravity of the ship up significantly. And that caused, when she rolled, that caused her to roll over to one side and hang there And that's a little bit discomforting to have a ship roll and hang before she comes back up. You know she's going to come back up, but even so. However, I took Reliance into some really, really bad weather. I launched and recovered helicopters right on the edge of the pitch and roll limitations. And in one case, in one SAR case, I kept the aircraft out a little bit long, thinking that we had just a little bit more daylight. We had a little bit more time that we might be able to find some survivors in the water, and had to recover with the ship pitching and rolling outside of the limitations. That was an interesting operation. The aircraft commander happened to be a very close personal friend, and I talked to him on the radio, captain to aircraft commander, and his first name was Joe, and I said, Joe, this is Captain Joe, and you get one shot. And when you get the cut signal from the landing signal officer, you've got to come down, hit that deck with down collective, and hold her down. And my deckhands will grab onto you right away. And I said, you've got the best of the crew. You've got my best LSO, my best landing signal officer, and you've got my best deck crew. And so we'll get you down. And sure enough, he followed his instructions. He did exactly the way he was trained. And after the machine had been lashed down, put into high and low tie downs, he came up to the deck, and I was sitting up in the captain's chair. He came up to the deck and up to the chair, and he did not say a word. He just put his hand out, and we shook hands. So this ship has served the Coast Guard for 55 years. Reliance is going to be a little bit older when she's finally decommissioned. And I was looking at the photograph of her, and she is absolutely immaculate. She looks just as beautiful now as the day that she was commissioned, and maybe even a little bit better, because one of the design features of this particular class was that when they were built, they exhausted it out through the stern, and they fouled themselves. And in a midlife extension for Decisive, she was the uptakes for the engines were routed up through some proper stacks that were built, and they were built high enough so that the exhaust gases from the engines did not cause any problem with launching and recovering helicopters. Anyway. All of the ships in that class were given names of desirable human characteristics like Reliance and Decisive and Alert. There was no Desperate, no Coast Guard Cutter Desperate. There was no Coast Guard Cutter Chastity, no Coast Guard Cutter Puberty. None of those names were applied to any of those ships, and it is just a remarkable piece of good value to the American taxpayer that these ships have served for 55 years. Amazing, just amazing. So well done to all of the Decisives that have taken care of her over all of those 55 years, and in particular to the crew that hauled down all of her bunting for the last time and handed to her captain his personal commissioning pennant. The On to a couple of things that are not quite so happy to talk about, because we have to do that, and because there are things in this world that we need to acknowledge are happening. So the magazine today is not really a magazine. Once again, it's a newspaper, and this time it is the Northwest Airlifter, which is the newspaper of the airlift unit over at McCord Air Force Base. It is also includes some of the Stars and Stripes. And Stars and Stripes goes back to World War II. There's been a continual publication of Stars and Stripes for that long, and now it is incorporated in these unit newspapers. So the first article in the Northwest Airlifter for the most recent issue is that the chief of staff of the Air Force has approved a loosening of the regulations having to do with tattoos. Now, I'm not going to get into whatever my personal biases either for or against tattoos are. I will say that I do not have one. I will also say that there have been times when I have been ashore in, shall we say, less than, well, it wasn't always a Christian Science reading room, and the possibility of getting maybe a small anchor tattooed in some strategic place may have been a temptation, but it is one that I always did not follow. So the so here's a quote from this is the lovely language, which is so beloved of military writers these days, and this has to do with the rationale for liberalizing the policy for tattoos in the Air Force. And there's also a drawing that shows that if you drop a plumb line, or in my case, a lead line, straight down from the front part of the ear, that on the left-hand side of that line is a green check mark. That means that you can have a small tattoo there. To the right of that line is an X, a red X. And in all fairness, there's a male and a female drawing. And to the right of that line is a red X, which means that under the chin, you cannot have a tattoo. So those of you who are tempted to get a tattoo around the chin, you don't get it. So here's, it says, this approach, which has to do with increasing the pool of people who are eligible to join the military, became a reality when various stakeholders realized these opportunities would need supporting policy, guidance, resources, and legal authorization. Additionally, the team is currently executing a comprehensive policy review to identify existing requirements that disqualify many potential airmen and guardians from serving and are irrelevant to warfighting. All of that means is you can now have a tattoo to the left of that straight line if you drop it down from your ear. The other thing that is much more troubling to me is that there is a policy change which came in the Defense Authorization Act for last year, which allows cadets and midshipmen at the service academies to not only remain in the academy, but also to be commissioned. And that is if they have children while they are at the academy. Now, I cannot understand what the rationale for this is. So I can only say, when I was a cadet, that should you become a parent or a parent-to-be while you were a cadet, you immediately had to resign. There was no discussion about it. There was nothing other than the fact that you had to present yourself to the commandant of cadets. You had to report that you were about to become a parent, and you submitted your letter of resignation. This always seemed to me to be a fair policy. The service academies are difficult enough, and they should be extremely difficult to get through so that we get the best to be our future admirals and generals, our future chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And so now what happens, apparently, is that when a cadet or a midshipman gets one of those letters from his now affianced that they are both about to become parents, apparently he holds a baby shower in his room at the academy. Now, this is in the Defense Authorization Act, And the Coast Guard's authorization comes through the Department of Homeland Security. So I do not yet know whether or not the Coast Guard Academy is going to be covered under this particular legislation. Probably it is. But I am going on record here with all of Captain Joe's people that this is not the right thing to have done. Not the right thing to have done. The another sad statistic. The number of suicides in the Navy is up dramatically in 2022. And all of this was brought to the attention of all of us who read outlets like the Navy Times or from the Naval Institute when the carrier George Washington had several suicides all at the same time. And this caused an inquiry, as well it should, but this inquiry should have been conducted by the commanding officer. He should have been looking inside himself, and he should be looking at his command and see what, if anything, is going on inside this command. We're talking about a small town when it has the air group embarked that can be as many as 5,000 people. And yet, when these are 5,000 people who have all sworn an oath of obedience, and these are 5,000 people who have in their organic ship's company a medical staff, including psychologists and flight surgeons, who are trained to identify when people are having difficulties and need some help. And it has a shipboard organization, which includes things like chief petty officers. Chief petty officers who are the experienced sailors and who should be knowing when their hands are in difficulty and in trouble. So one of the things that the Navy is doing is that they are assigning chaplains to destroyers as part of ship's company rather than people who come across on the across between from the oiler. I've told stories on this program before about my captain in Vietnam who did not ever want to have a chaplain come across on the personnel transfer from the oiler or from the ammunition ship. And so I would never take him up to the cabin and introduce him to the captain. I would keep him down in the wardroom. Somehow this does not seem to me to be the right approach. I would be looking at, again, the personality of the ship. I would be looking at the way that the captain manages his ship. How does he manage XO? How does he manage the chief's mess? How do all of these people work together so that they are indeed true shipmates? A shipmate is he or she who puts his mates and ship before himself. The word shipmate appears almost never anymore. I am reviving it here with Captain Joe's people, but I don't have to do it with Captain Joe's people because all of you grew up with this idea. And all of you hear it from me every time that we get together. My book today is not really a book. It's a pamphlet. And the title of it is Transporting Liquefied Natural Gas by Surface Ships from the North Slope of Alaska to World Markets. And I'm bringing this up because your captain is the author of that particular wonderful document. It has just been put onto the into the library, the electronic library at the University of Cambridge. And should you contain your eagerness long enough to write down the link that I'm going to give to you, you can call this up and you can read it. And when I got the notice from the Scott Poer Research Institute that my master's thesis had indeed been enrolled in the archives at the University of Cambridge Library, I said, well, how many people have read this? Because they can track. And it turns out that there were quite a few. And I said, well, sacre bleu. I'm going to put this out on From the Captain's Chair so that if anybody else would like to read it, they can. And I read it. I reread it just not too long ago. And I thought to myself, that's a pretty doggone good paper. And in fact, some of the things that I predicted are happening. And some of the other things that I predicted that are not yet happening are going to. So the way you can read this is go to repository, R-E-P-O-S-I-T-O-R-Y, repository.cam, C-A-M, .ac.uk, repository.cam.ac.uk. And you can read and just glory in the language of that particular master's thesis, which I wrote to complete the degree requirements for my degree at the University of Cambridge. I take a great deal of issue, as a matter of fact. It turns out that the Navy is having trouble manning up their destroyer fleet. And in order to fill out ship's company so that a ship sails with the right number of people on the watch, quarter, and station bill, they are sending people temporary additional duty, which means that people who are snugged down in some really relatively soft shore job, thinking that he is safe from going back to sea, he gets detailed from that shore job and sent TAD, temporary additional duty, to a destroyer for destroyer deployment. Well, this one, it should be obvious to all of Captain Joe's people the disadvantages of this particular system, and one of them is that a crew has to have a sense of ownership of the ship to which they belong. That's why a ship has the pride in itself to make sure that there's no running rust, for example. We've talked about that before. And so when you send people TAD, they don't care. All they want to do is finish the job and get back ashore. And the fact that they're drawing a little bit of sea pay isn't enough compensation for most people who are in seagoing ratings who have a shore billet for a while. The answer to this is to take a really good look at where all of these shipboard ratings, like bosun's mate and quartermaster and radarman and all of the shipboard ratings, where those are that are parked in these shoreside jobs. And to make sure that the fact that the Navy is indeed a seagoing outfit, and that in order to keep the ships at sea, then people have to be put into those billets. And it's two bells already, and it's 1300, and already my pontification must come to an end. And a lovely lady just walked by and waved right through the window at the Gene Bosch broadcast studio. So this is indeed your Captain Joe once again saying to all of you, take care of those for whom you're accountable and responsible. And we'll meet again here once again very shortly, a week from today. And I'll give my Alaska report then. And I am, as always, on station and watching properly.